What's up, guys? This is Tyler Lawrence Gray, and you're listening to Wolfpack on Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. Not a Teen Wolf spinoff.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. This week, we are talking about Wolfpack Season 1, Episode 5, Incendiary. My name is Karen. As always, I'm joined by Natalie. What's up, Nat?
Oh, not much. I don't know. I mean, the real truth is I've got a sore throat.
Oh, no.
Not so much affecting my speaking, but I felt like I had a swollen gland in my neck for like months. I went to the doctor and they gave me some antibiotics to be like, yeah. And while taking it, I feel like it went down. But now it's finished. It just feels like it's back again. And I don't understand why. So,
really?
Yeah, I don't know. Good. It's weird. How are you, Karen?
I'm good. I also had a neck injury over the weekend in which I went to the ER because I strained a muscle in my neck. And it was very silly, and I had to get a shot in the butt.
I don't understand this. I don't understand why it had to be in the butt and what it was.
I think it's just the type of
muscle
shot.
Relaxing.
Yeah, that was a cortisone shot, I think. And I think they just have to do it in the butt because there's like more muscle there. Maybe it's a longer.
Oh, I feel like I've always had that kind of stuff in the upper thigh. But,
really? I think you said thigh or butt. I was in so much pain that I was like, I don't care. Do what you got to do. Doesn't matter to me. I'm fine now. I can move my neck in every direction once again. So it's all good.
Cool. That's good.
Yeah.
And do you have to go to like a massage, like a masseuse or something, like a not a chiropractor?
They said
but like
if,
a remedial massage or something.
If it kind of lingers,
therapy.
If it's not going to get better, then I should probably do something about that. Yeah, they suggested maybe like physical therapy or something. So right, it's been like 2 days. I feel 98% better. So I'm gonna see how I feel after the next couple of days, and if it's still kind of acting weird, then I might look into doing something like
that. I mean, yeah, I always get like sore, like a tight neck or I'm surprised as a writer that you haven't yet experienced like a big neck, like, oh, I've been locked in one place working on a something and it means that I have like tensed my shoulders and neck so much that I've had to seize up.
Yeah, I get a lot of pain in my shoulders because of that. I recently bought a very fancy chair, and I'm hoping that that will kind of stop that from happening or at least slow it down so it doesn't happen as often. Yeah. This was
real bad.
Yeah, it was real bad. So hopefully I don't experience that again.
Okay. If we'd been recording when that like jumped and started hurting you, that would have been interesting.
Yes, it would have been. I would have had to have abandoned the episode.
Because we were meant to be recording when that occurred.
Yeah.
Oh, so, my God.
You know.
Anyway.
Could have been live on air. Let's just podcast. You know, it took me like 2 hours to be in the emergency room. We could have podcasted
could have just
from
put
there.
It through when you just would just like,
live episode. Would have been interesting.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Okay.
If you guys have any horror stories, if you've recently had some neck troubles, let us know. You can write into us on Twitter and Instagram at NATW Podcast, on Tumblr at notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com, or you can regale us with the story via email at natwpodcast@gmail.com. I would like that.
You but can tell us all about the strange ailments that may afflict you.
Yes. Or you could talk to us about Wolfpack, which is also relevant, I guess.
Yeah.
And this week, like I said, we are talking about Wolfpack Season 1, Episode 5, Incendiary. And this episode started off with a little bit of a flashback. We got Harlan as a little kid with the biggest, brightest freckles that I've ever seen on anybody.
He's so cute. Oh my God. Cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. In our interview with Tyler Lawrence Gray, he did say, we said, are there still going to be flashbacks? Like, are there going to be a lot of flashbacks? And he was like, yeah, I think that there will be to help, like, fill in the story. There's a lot of flashbacks, Karen. Yeah. Like, we're getting a lot. I'm like, I'm not mad at it. But it's like, I was kind of expecting, like, I don't know, like, shorter ones. This is, like, quite foundational. Like, as in, like, we're getting a bigger picture of the past with the kids through a lot of large flashbacks.
Yeah. I really liked this one with Harlan as a little kid because, one, you get to see Harlan and Garrett as they used to be. Their relationship was much closer. You could tell that there's a lot of trust between them. So basically they're out in the woods and they're testing his powers. I think Garrett even has like a little notebook that he's writing things down on, and they're trying to figure out why sometimes he can hear like exceptionally well and why sometimes he can't. And like I said, there's so much trust between them. Garrett says that Harlan knows the forest better than he does. And Harlan kind of trusts that his dad is leading him in the right direction. He says, okay, you just start walking and you just let it come to you and see if you can figure out like why you can hear better sometimes and see if you can get a grasp on like how to control it. And so Harlan does this. He walks out into the middle of the woods and he hears something moving in the forest around him, and he hides in a little den, and this wolf walks right up to him.
Mm-hmm. I cannot say that I thought what Harlan thought.
Yeah. We'll get to that
if
in
you
a
know
bit
what I mean. I was just like, oh, it's a wolf. Okay. Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
What did you think of Garrett and Harlan's relationship here?
That was so cute. Like, Garrett, you know, being sweet and not pushy, just being like, you know, clearly Harlan's like, Dad, something weird's going on with me. And he's like, okay, well, let's see. And, you know, just really supportive and trusting. And Garrett looked cool with this kind of, like, jeans and rock star T-shirt.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was much less traumatic than the Luna flashback. So
that's true. Yeah.
You know, it did win out in that department.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the hearing's all great. The wolf thing, I was like, oh, a wolf. But I did not assume what Harlan assumed.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on that. We'll get to that in a bit. But this was a really cute cold open to the show. It was a nice little glimpse at their relationship. You can really tell like how much things have changed since then. And it was just nice to see them sort of on the same page working together as a team.
Yeah, I mean, it just adds to the whole like Garrett is like the best.
Yeah.
Best guy ever. So, you know, that's good too.
But speaking of working as a team, Harlan, Luna, and Blake show up at Everett's house while his parents are out, and they're trying to figure out what the heck is going on after what we discovered at the end of the last episode. So Garrett knows that Kristen found blood on the tree. So we had a lot of speculation about whether she would tell anybody that she found all that blood, and she did. And so now the kids are worried about what happened to Miller.
Yeah, so I guess that she actually did report that in an official capacity, even though she said, finding Miller's not my problem, she made it her problem. So, I was kind of, like, a bit, not struck, because we sort of knew it was coming, but, like, these kids, they're all in now. They're like, yeah, we are doing things as a group. We're not resisting anymore, you know?
Yeah. I wonder
after
if
the
that
end of last week.
Be, like, a little up and down over these next few episodes, or if this is, like, this is it. Like, this is how we deal with things now.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know. There's probably going to be some big thing that makes one or two of them, like, be like, fuck this.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's going to be like a push-pull every week. Like, oh, I don't want to. I'm not in the pack. I think it's on now, and it'll be on until something really bad happens to one of them. Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. So while they're here, they're speculating that the monster went after Danny because he hit Blake, even though obviously he didn't really mean it. He was just a kid and it kind of just, he struck out at her. It was protecting Blake. And so it went after Danny. And I had this crazy theory, just the way that they were talking about this. And this show in particular, I'm ready to just like throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. But my crazy theory here is, what if the monster is a manifestation of their anger? Like, it's not an actual person transforming. It's like a byproduct of them being in the pack.
I have no idea, really. It could be. We have no real... We don't know what it is. It's very strange, whatever it is. You know, there's a little bit of evidence in this episode about, I guess, where it is at certain times versus where other people are, I guess. I mean, or it could be, maybe not. But look, we hear a lot of things in this episode about what the monster may be or may not be. They're all strange theories, so why not? Why not this theory?
I'm going to be really proud of myself if it ends up being true. So they're also talking about Connor because Everett's wondering why Connor isn't in the pack. He was bitten too, and Luna kind of brings up this fact that he might be too weak to be in the pack. And she says, what do you do to a horse with a broken leg? Because Connor obviously had a broken leg. And I'm like, Luna knows the answer to this question better than most, doesn't she?
Yeah, I mean, it also didn't quite fit for me because if they get the werewolf bite, they should heal. I guess we see Connor didn't heal. Like, it didn't heal his break when he got the bite. Didn't take, I guess. And, yeah, Luna theoretically knows. Knows this. I mean, her horse didn't have a broken leg, but, you know, that's the story they've been spinning for so long. I don't know. I think Connor's out there. I feel like I caught a glimpse of him in the trailer, but we'll see.
Yeah. I really don't know what's going on with Connor right now because that's just a mystery that they keep hanging over our head. So I'll be interested once we find out what is going on and how many legs he has when he comes back. Yeah,
fair enough.
But they're interrupted by another call. Everett gets another call from the unknown number. And I found it really interesting that even Harlan was like, Garrett said we shouldn't answer it.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of cute because I was like, Harlan wants to rebel against Garrett more than anybody else. But even he is like, trying to kind of follow the rules. And I think that shows how freaked out he is about this.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I think that Harlan is a good boy who loves his daddy, really.
Yeah. And so Luna and Harlan also end up getting a phone call and they specifically say, like, you've never gotten a call from this number before, have you? And they were like, no. And when Harlan answers, a really sharp sound like hurts his ears and he ends up hanging up on them. Like, do we have any idea why this happened?
No. I wonder if maybe it's like something on the end of the line is doing one of those, like, you know, whistles only dogs can hear.
Yeah.
Something.
It's interesting.
But he's still, but like, the person on the line still supports Harlan, allegedly. So. Right. Maybe he's in a place where sounds are happening.
Yeah. I mean, it's just interesting that, I mean, obviously he calls back again, Everett answers it, puts it on speakerphone. And so Harlan would still be able to hear what was on the other end of the line. I don't know.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
Maybe the phone calls are not real. Like, maybe they're just, I mean, they're real, but like, maybe it's more like, fuck, I don't know. I'm kind of thinking like maybe they're just using the phone as a conduit for some sort of like magic call, if you know what I mean. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that makes sense. Like, maybe it's not literally someone calling on a phone. It's someone tapping into the phone via some sort of other power, and the power is doing that. But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But Everett does end up answering the next phone call, and the voice quotes Ovid's Metamorphoses, the story of Lycaon, who tried to trick Zeus into eating human flesh. And I just want to read out what the person on the phone said in case, like, I had to go back and really, like, listen to it and everything. So I just want to read it out real quick. He took to flight, and on the silent plains is howling in his vain attempts to speak. He raves and rages, and his greedy jaws, desiring their accustomed slaughter, turn against the sheep, still eager for their blood. His vesture separates in shaggy hair, his arms are changed to legs, and as a wolf he has the same gray locks, the same hard face, the same bright eyes, the same ferocious look.
Okay, I feel like whether he's the actor or not, this voice, I think it is Ian Bowen.
It sounds just like him, doesn't it?
I feel like, you know, even if it's like this is meant to be like the monster doing or whatever, doing a warped voice, and when we meet the person, it's not Bowen. This, yeah, it sounds like exactly like him.
He's just, he has a very specific cadence, especially when he's being dramatic, I feel like.
Yeah.
And it just reminds me so much of him. I wouldn't be surprised if Jeff was just like, hey, can you be the voice on the phone? And then when they reveal who it is, it's going to be somebody completely different.
Or like, oh, surprise, it's Peter Hale. At least your universes are connected, but you guys get a warped version of werewolves. My nice, clean Beacon Hills werewolves don't have any of this bullshit.
Yeah. So after this big speech, which, what did you think of this? I was like very kind of taken aback. I wasn't expecting.
I was just like, wow, this man's talking more than he usually does, basically. I was like, okay, we're really having a conversation now.
Yeah. And I mean, I liked the dramatic reading. It definitely added to something like that. And it was so funny because he hangs up and then immediately pretty much calls back. Well, Harlan's like, the fuck was that? And it was so funny. Like, his reaction, I think, is so real to like how teenagers would react to something like this.
Yeah.
But the voice calls back and says he's their teacher, which...
It's all very, okay. I mean, maybe it's, that's a, maybe it's literally their teacher.
Maybe.
But here's my thing. We now have voice on the phone guy who allegedly is supporting the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So voice on the phone guy is pro children trying to protect them. Werewolf is also pro-children trying to protect them, but it's killing people to do so.
By murder.
So voice on the phone guy is like, werewolf loves you, but he is killing people. Mm-hmm. So it's like two different parties both trying to protect the children.
Mm-hmm.
If they are, in fact, two different parties and the voice on the phone isn't actually the werewolf, you know, with his phone in his werewolf pocket, trying to warn them about himself because he can't control himself.
Right.
Which I think is possible, but I don't know.
Yeah. It's a bit confusing right now. And...
But everyone loves the kids. The kids don't have an enemy here.
Right. Apparently.
So that's good.
And yeah, but I just found it really interesting that the voice was basically like, oh yeah, I'm your teacher now. Well, you know, okay, Deaton, could you be a little more helpful here once in a while? Although he does say the wolf kills every night and now it's killing for you. It's a predatory urge that it can't resist, and it hunts at night and then sleeps during the day. And so this kind of brought up a question like, okay, are there any characters we don't really see during the day?
I don't know.
I feel like there's a few too many characters on the show.
You know, we've seen the kids at school, like, you know, like, unlike, we've seen both of those boys that like Harlan during the day. We've seen mm-hmm. them at school or at the gym. We've seen Kristen during the day. She did look tired, though. I don't know. It's possible that the voice on the phone is Kristen using a voice modifier, given what we find out that she knows at the end of the episode.
Yeah, she's, I've wondered that too.
Anti-werewolf. Or maybe even her friend, Zhang, maybe he is actually knows everything as well.
Mm.
But I don't know. Yeah. I feel like someone in the show, someone we know already in the show, has to actually be a part of this already. You know, yeah. They have to be... So at least one person that we know is either the werewolf or the guy on the phone or both.
Mm-hmm.
These can't possibly be two brand new people.
Yeah, I'm expecting for at some point like the reveal to happen and then maybe like getting a flashback where this person was there like the whole time and we just didn't notice them or something. But yeah, Jesus. I don't think it's going to be two new characters. there's got to be somebody we've already seen that we just don't suspect. Or maybe we do suspect them, but...
I mean, Kristen, she's got to be something.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot more going on there for sure. But the voice on the phone also says the only way to stop the monster is together. So the voice is not only pro-children, it's pro-pack, which is pretty interesting.
Maybe it's two werewolves, one nice one and one that's gotten out of control. I do have theories about what Harlan says later, right? Okay. Which is kind of jumping ahead a bit, but it's about the Lycaon thing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's like nice, good werewolves just turn into normal wolves, and werewolves that have killed humans or eaten humans turn into the big 7-foot monster. And so maybe like their real dad is nice werewolf on the phone and their real mom has eaten a bunch of people and is now the 7-foot monster, or vice versa. You know, like a expat, like divorced werewolf parents.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Divorced werewolf parents.
I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah. I think that would be really interesting. Like killing, you know, kind of turns you into a monster versus like just living a peaceful Zen werewolf life. Yeah. I will say that the voice is a little bit helpful because it does share a location and they end up following it to a car wreck. And this is what we saw in the preview last week. And we kind of discussed it at the end of the last episode where like even Harlan was like, well, we're trying to save somebody's life. I'm not going to slow down, which I thought, you know, like you said before, they're kind of all in together on this. And even though they're still bickering, they're all on the same page trying to save somebody.
Yeah.
And that somebody happens to be the nurse from the first episode who's injured and kind of in this upside down car. The doctor who is driving is already dead. And they see her basically get pulled back out of the car and she presumably dies as well. And I was really curious about this because we know that the werewolf is attacking people who have hurt the kids in some way, but I'm not really sure I understand the connection with the nurse, unless it was maybe because she called Everett's parents, like the same thing with the doctor. They were there with the parents, didn't really like step in to do anything. But to me, that kind of feels like a stretch because the parents are way worse. Why don't you just kill the parents?
Oh my God. I know. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like his mom's going to get it at a point, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess maybe the doctors, were just interfering with them, didn't believe him about the... I don't know. I actually don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll explain, or maybe they won't. Maybe they'll be like, oh, all of the people that got hurt, like, here's what they did to us, but maybe not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As tragic as this scene was, I kind of liked that they failed here. I think that makes it interesting instead of like, you know, saving the day, saving the person, coming together as a pack. Like they're still stumbling. They still don't really know what to do. And I think when they hightail it out of there and when everyone's yelling at each other in the car, it's so realistic because they're all freaking out. They don't know what to do. They're not really friends, you know, like they don't understand what's going on. And then Luna screams to shut them up.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell if this was like almost like an alpha thing. You know, we've seen Scott do that, like roar at a pack member to kind of like get them in place. Or if it's just like a pack member thing, or if this is like another power that could be coming out. But it like they all shut up and I think they all take a minute to sort of like think about what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know. I do think it's, you know, it's at least from like feeding off the emotions, but it could be an alpha thing.
Yeah, because we were talking last week too about her sort of being like the mother of the pack at the moment. And so I could kind of see it being that thing, but also just, you know, maybe this is her kind of asserting some sort of dominance and like it actually works. I wonder if that will build later on or if this is just kind of going to be a one-off thing.
Yeah, I think that I think if there was going to be like a kind of leader situation, it would be her. But we also know from all of that pre-series press or the idea that Luna's going to go a bit dark. She's going to find something out that makes her flip out a bit.
Yeah, very interested to see that.
Yeah.
So next day at the school, Everett and Blake see Kristen there, and they see Cyrus being taken away for questioning and all of that. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But they end up meeting in the bathroom with the two others, with Harlan and Luna, to talk about it. And I just got to say, Harlan checks the stalls this time. I was cackling because last time I was like, he didn't even check the stalls. And I just love that in this episode, he did. It was so funny.
Do you think someone overheard them last time?
It's possible. And I'm glad that Harlan was just like, yeah, this is getting a little spooky. Like, people knowing what we're doing and what we're talking about. Maybe we should just take extra precautions. So I loved that. But Everett got another location on his phone from The Voice. And this time it's The Voice.
He's very tech savvy with his like pin drops. Yeah. Like, he's very like, you know, specific. If you know this stuff, guy on the phone, why don't you do something about it?
Yeah, right.
And how does he know who the werewolf is going to target unless he is also the werewolf?
I know. That was so interesting to me. Like, we really don't get any explanation. I don't even think that the kids like question it. They're just like, okay, yeah, this is what's going to happen next.
Yeah, I would be like, how does this guy know? Mm-hmm. If this guy knows who's getting attacked next, surely he is the attacker.
Yeah. And it's like, I could understand. Like,
beat me to the crime, like, kind of thing.
I could understand like the car wreck because that was like already done with. And they, you know, like that could have happened as he was sending that text message. But this is like, he sends this message during the day. Saying,
hours before. Like, this is weird, Karen. This is weird.
Yeah, it's definitely weird. And I hope we get like an explanation of this at some point. Maybe when the voice is revealed, we'll understand. But yeah, I don't know. But either way, there's going to be a little kickback at Tia's house. And they're like, oh, we're not going to be able to get in or whatever. And Harlan's like, no, I got this. I know how to get into the party. And I really so love helpful. This. I know. I love this side of him. Like, he's still snarky. He's still himself. But he's actually being helpful. And, like, they're actually working as a pack. And, like, I really love it.
Yeah. I mean, he's adorable. And then when they had the first phone call with the phone creep, not the first one, but the one that they shared, you know, the person on the phone addresses them all by name.
Mm.
He seems to know their personalities. Like, they, you know, he says the only reason, Blake knows how to stop him. It's the only reason she's still there. Like, how does he know her personality and her resistance to join with everyone? How closely is this man spying on them?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they are united in a pack. Sorry, it just reminded me. They are being much more united, but they're also being really spied on. And I'm so confused by that.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a supernatural thing where, like, they can overhear them talking or see them talking from a distance or something like that. Or, you know, if there's, like, they're bugged, like their phones are bugged or something like that. I really don't know what direction this is going to go
in. Yeah, he knows a lot of personal dynamics from the group. Yeah, it's really odd, to be honest, the level of observation and lack of interference. Like, does it frustrate you when there's like a helpful guide who doesn't just like come out with the actual details?
I mean, yeah. I mean, this person on the phone clearly knows everything that's going on. And is
so it's like a test. It has to be like a test.
Yeah. Like, just helpful enough for them to do it themselves so they gain the experience, but not so helpful that he's just like dumping all of this exposition on them, which is very frustrating, but you know.
I mean, yeah, we had 6 years of dating.
Yeah.
You know. So never offering up what he actually knew.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this kind of segues into the next scene, too, because Harlan calls Everett out on not being able to control his super strength. And I actually really ended up loving what came after this. So Harlan ends up going to the gym and meeting up with Cody, which is yellow tank top guy, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we found out yellow tank top guy does come back. His name is Cody, and he's buying drugs for the party tonight, but doesn't seem to want to do it in front of Everett. Like, he sees Everett starting to work out, and he's like, yeah, let's go into the locker room. And then
actually, that wasn't my interpretation of that.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't that he didn't want to do it in front of Everett. It was that he came to the gym saying, what Cody asks is, like, are you buying or are you going to work? Are you just here to buy or are you also working out? And he sees Everett working on his strength. And he said to Everett earlier, because they have that little bitchy moment of, like, at least I can hear all the time, why aren't you increasing your strength? It's like, why aren't you practicing your strength, right? I didn't take it as, I'm not going to buy drugs in front of Everett. Everett's going to find out later. I took it as he was just there to get the drugs. And, well, I mean, A, probably don't do it in front of the entire room of people regardless. Yeah. But B, he wasn't planning to stay and work out, but he sees Everett trying and he's like, oh, he's here. I will stay and work out and watch him.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go to the locker room so I can get changed and just get this out of the way.
Right.
That was okay. My interpretation. Not that he didn't want to do it in front of Everett, but that Everett being there made him think, like, change his mind about, oh, yeah, I will stay and work out at the mm-hmm. gym because I want to see what's going on with Everett.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And, I mean, that is what ends up happening. He's, you know, Everett's working out and suddenly him and Harlan are kind of in this competition to see who can lift the most weights. And Everett kind of wipes the floor with Harlan. Like, it takes a little bit to kind of get up to that point, but then he's pretty much doing it very easily. And Harlan clearly hates this and is trying to outlift him. I don't
know if he hates. It's a very interesting dynamic.
I don't think it's hate in that he hates Everett. I think he's frustrated. I think he's usually, like, he's not really prepared for this kid to one-up him. Like, he's kind of used to being a little bit of, you know, the alpha male, I guess, in the room.
And he wanted Everett to do this.
He did, I think it's...
I think he's just pushing. I took it as him pushing Everett. As he kept racking up. I sensed
a little frustration there too.
I don't think it was like pure sweetness, you know. But he was racking up the weights and I think he kept pushing and maybe to see if Everett would keep escalating, but also male pride. And then, yeah, he puts a couple more plates on that he can't do, basically. Yeah. And Everett has to save him.
Yeah, and he has to beg for help, which I think for Harlan was probably a little difficult.
Oh, I mean, the fact that the whole room stopped and watched, like, it's very embarrassing. Yeah. Very, very embarrassing.
But then he does kind of tap into Everett's strength, and he does lift it on his own by the end. And they sit down afterwards and have a really kind of open and vulnerable discussion.
In public, in front of everyone.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Saying that, you know, they need to figure out how to do that all the time. And Everett says, you know, he's tried listening to his parents, but it didn't really work. And I loved that Harlan acknowledged this, but didn't linger on the fact that Everett's mom might hate him. Like, he just kind of says, brutal, and then moves on. And it was a very Harlan thing to do, but I also think it was, like, the perfect thing for Everett. Like, yeah, that sucks, but, like, we don't have to, like, hit it over the head or anything, you know? They're not that close yet, but it felt like a little bit of a peace offering or something between them, like acknowledgement that his family life isn't great.
Mm-hmm.
And then Everett asks Harlan how he got so good at being able to control his hearing. And Harlan tells him about the time that he was out in the woods with the wolf and how he felt a connection to this wolf and knew that it was his real dad.
Yeah.
Do we trust this? Because this feels like some unreliable narrator bullshit.
I think it comes from Harlan wanting that to be true.
Yeah.
It's a very strange thing to take as fact.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's what you mean by unreliable narrator,
yeah.
Yes, it's a very strange thing to take as fact. If, in fact, Harlan, you know, he just sort of seems to have decided this, that he thought that it was his real father. Again, really stuck on the father thing because Harlan doesn't know about mothers, so he doesn't make the link to mothers. Well, like, you know what I mean? Like, he's only had a dad, so he thinks that. And it's a bit delusional, to be honest. I'm like, I'm like, okay, you sense that this wolf is your real dad. Like, sure, okay,
mm-hmm.
I believe you. I believe that you think that.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly. Like, he's desperate for it to be true, which is, you know, once again, Harlan being a little vulnerable, because I don't think that he would normally admit to those kind of things. And I guess, like, this kind of goes with it too, this contest between them. I think one, Everett, some like begrudging respect from Harlan, like they're talking like friends would talk in this moment. And we had, you know, you had said before about wanting Harlan and Everett to be friends and sort of have a relationship. And I think in this moment, I really liked what I saw between them.
Yeah, I did as well. They had a little fist bump. They seemed to have been, you know, pleased with the outcome of, like, Harlan may have been pissed off during the lifting contest, but afterwards he's like, yeah, we need to work out how to share these powers more. Like, his main takeaway is like, wow, that was quite cool. And he's pleased that Everett took up his advice and all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's cute.
Yeah. And Everett kind of offers him a little bit in return too, because he wonders how the wolf dad got turned into a monster and speculates that if they could turn him back into a regular werewolf, they may be able to also then turn him back human.
Yeah. Again, this is like very much making an assumption with mm-hmm. no fact. So about the fact that the werewolf is their father and that the werewolf was the wolf that Harlan saw, you know, it's, but yeah, like I said earlier, my theory is if what was said is actually accurate, that the werewolf is one of their parents and that they used to be a normal wolf and then that they used to be a person, it may be that we have a good pure werewolf who just lives with nature, or and then we have a monster who's done evil, naughty killings mm-hmm. that are not, you know, ethical, even though the guy on the phone is like, the werewolf killing is not evil, it's just a predatory nature thing.
Right. Either way, I kind of like that we don't really know whether or not this is true. This is not information that's being discovered out of a book and taken as fact. Like, they might kind of take it as fact, but as the audience,
they're stupid kids.
Yeah, like, as the audience, we kind of know, okay, this is them just trying to figure out what's going on. And if it ends up not being true, I think this is kind of a good bait and switch for the show, is like leading us down this road and then ends up being completely different.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we'll just have to wait and see to figure out if they were right or not.
Yeah.
But they do kind of have a plan for the rest of the night, which is they go to this kickback, not a party, it's kickback. And they...
I don't know what that means, but okay.
I don't either. Like, I mean, kickback is like hanging out, I guess. Yeah. The youths are kicking back. But the plan is to be nice to everyone for a few hours so no one accidentally gets killed. And Everett's line of, if that's the plan, we need a new plan, and then looking directly at Blake was so
and then,
funny.
But also Luna looks at Harlan and he's like, what? Like, it's like, he's very like, funny.
Yeah, it was so great. I loved that. And that's the thing. Yeah. Like, I'm living for this pack relationship. Like, it's not easy or comfortable. They're not like friends yet. They don't really know that much about each other, but they're more than reluctant allies too. Like, they are in this together, even if they don't always get along.
Yeah. It's a very cute dynamic. It's, again, like last week I was like, oh, I liked this episode the best. This one I probably liked a little more just because of the back and forth between the four of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it is really kind of ramping up to have this familiarity. And, yeah, I guess, like, they're bonded through this difficult situation. They definitely do a lot to help each other, even if they are not friends. But they are friends, but they're not, you know?
Yeah, it's so interesting because, like, they share the secret amongst them, right? And they're all in the same position as werewolves. And yet they have a lot of personality clashes between them, and it like it works, but it also feels fragile at the same time. And I'm so interested to see how that's going to morph over time. Cause I mean, at this point we only have a couple more episodes left, and I'm very curious to see which relationships really get cemented and which ones have even bigger cracks in them by the end.
Yeah.
But they do show up to the party, the kickback, sorry. And Harlan's peace offering for Tia is mushrooms.
Oh, dear.
It was a big bag of mushrooms. And Luna and Austin kind of find each other pretty early on, I think we can presume. And they're talking, and he's kind of an asshole to her after the fact that she drew that, you know, drawing of the werewolf for him, and they kind of shared a little bit of a moment together. And you would think that she already knows he's an asshole, so like, why does she like him? I mean,
I don't know. I
get
like,
it because like
no stop speaking.
Okay.
No.
You're not going to like what I have to say later then.
My theory is that she doesn't know him that well, that her drawing the picture was like really the first time that they'd like had a conversation. That she just thought he was cute and brooding from afar, and that now she's seeing his back, or like she thought he was funny in classes, maybe making a crack to the teachers or something like that, right?
Right.
But that, you know, close up, he turns this nasty sarcasm on her because that's just how he speaks to everyone, that, like, that he is a dick to everyone, that he takes everyone in really bad faith and finds something to mock them about. And, yeah, my impression was that she really hadn't, like, that she had a crush on him from afar, but that she hadn't had those kind of interactions with him to learn that. And then I really thought when she was like, wow, you're an asshole, I thought that was going to be it. Like, I don't like him anymore, you know, like, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
She's pretty pathetic. Anyway, what were you going to say about at this point
about them? I'll get to them in a minute. But here, Everett basically comes up to her and says, you should probably stop looking at him like you want to kill him, which is pretty good advice for this point. Then Cody shows up with more friends and more mushrooms, and they all end up taking it, except for Luna. Yeah. Even Everett takes some, and Everett's reaction is the only one that was realistic to me from the stories I've heard about, like, eating mushrooms. They're pretty gross to eat just plain like that.
Yeah.
But I also thought this was really funny because Last Week Tonight with John Oliver just came back, and it was about psychedelic assisted therapy. And Everett talks about having taken mushrooms in like a clinical
setting. Yeah. I'm surprised they give that to underage kids.
Yeah.
But yes, it is definitely a thing, like microdosing clinics, especially in certain states. Legal microdosing, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm actually pretty surprised that he would have got to do it as like a 16 or 17 year old. Yeah. But it's certainly becoming a thing.
Yeah, definitely. It was that episode of Last Week Tonight was really interesting. So who knows? But as the party goes on and everybody's having a grand old time, Luna gives Blake a bikini that was so small. God.
I just felt like, okay, like from the top of it to the bottom of it, there's not enough room for the boob.
Yeah.
Like as in the band of fabric doesn't feel like it's enough room to contain a boob. Like,
yeah.
Like it was for the kind of like flat chested 10-year-olds who want to wear a bikini instead of like a one piece when mm-hmm. they're a child. So, I mean, it was okay when it was on, but was what she handed her, the same costume that, or was it like in a bigger size when she actually put it on? Because it looked so small.
It did look so small. I assume it's the same one, but it looked tiny. I mean, it fit her great on, like it looked normal, but yeah, when she was just holding it up, I was like, how? But anyway. Yeah.
look. I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah.
And then they had some bonding in the pool together.
They did. So this is what you were talking about last week when you said...
In the trailer, there was and there was a moment of them seeming really intimate in the pool. And it does seem like the girls are actually feeling good about each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt like they were being pretty normal in this moment. And Everett ends up, you know, slowly stripping out of his clothes to get into the pool. And he doesn't really, like, come up to them. He's kind of hanging out on the other side. But him and Blake just keep looking back and forth at each other. And we had talked before, earlier in the season, about the relationships among all the pack members. So do you think that Blake and Everett will end up getting together? And are you still thinking that, like, this might become like a whole pack poly thing?
I don't know. I didn't expect Luna to be this into Austin instead of being weird about one of the kids in the pack.
Yeah.
But Luna and Blake seem very cozy now, despite Blake's reluctance. I genuinely don't know. The girls might have something going on. Obviously, Blake and Everett get together in a sense this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I don't know. Luna is a mystery.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. Like, obviously, she's super into Austin, but I still stand by that there were some vibes between
Luna
and Blake last week. So I don't really know what's going on there. But, you know... And then Harlan, he's kind of talking to Cyrus. He's kind of talking to Cody. Those two guys, like, aren't being super friendly to each other. And Harlan is basically, like, it seems like the conversation's going toward threesome, potentially.
I don't know. It seems like, to me, it was, like, a jealousy thing in a way. But, yeah, we definitely have Harlan with these two guys. Like, we saw the first guy, Cody. He was the guy who Harlan was having trouble controlling his thoughts about.
Yeah.
And Cody was, you know, he was kind of interested in the moment, but Harlan was like, what? I'm freaking out. He shows up. He's, you know, he's a life of the party kind of guy, and you see him kind of hanging out with a girl. And Cyrus is clearly very interested in Harlan in a serious way.
Yeah. And, yeah, he wants to go on a date with him.
And he starts this all off by being like, so... Cody, what do you like? What drugs? And by what drugs, I mean what genders.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like Cody's like, man, I don't care. I don't label myself. I'm good for anything. And Harlan, you know, it's definitely Cyrus being like, does Harlan like this guy instead of me? Then when they kind of go aside and Harlan is like, will you... jealous of him, or like, he doesn't say it quite like that, but he's being like, you think I wanted him? And Cyrus is like, yeah, I mean, he's really hot. And Harlan's like, no, I don't really want him. Like, he kind of mocks Cyrus a little bit for being so not possessive, but like on edge about Cody, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think that Cyrus is seriously interested. I think that, you know, them joking about, hey, should we try and pull him for a threesome is definitely possible.
Yeah.
But I did think the line of inquiry was more about Cyrus being like, hey, I seriously want you. Are you going to fuck around with him? And, yeah, he apparently wants to go on a date with Harlan and be serious with him in some way. And he's like, I don't want you to be a fuckboy. So.
Yeah. And Harlan kind of... He pushes back against that, like, a little bit. Like, he's kind of like, oh, a date, really? But then he ends up giving him his number, which, you know, before we get to the second part of that, I did find kind of interesting because up until this point, like, he's really been using sex and hooking up with people as a way to just, like, get away and take his mind off of other things. We haven't seen him show too much, like, serious interest. And I don't know if he just appreciated Cyrus being forthright or if he was legitimately interested in it or was just like, yeah, I'll give it a try.
I mean, when they hooked up in the previous episode, he got a little bit of a personal story from Cyrus about his dad. You know, mm-hmm. He's like, oh, this guy is actually maybe interesting to me in some way. But yeah, you know, I think Harlan really wants, like, love, and that he just isn't very good at navigating it. This guy is, like, laying out all the steps for him.
Yeah. And, of course, there has to be, you know, a wrench thrown into the works, because when he uses Cyrus's phone to call him, it comes up as no caller ID. So that's at least a little bit suspicious.
This could be, there's, you know, there's other things that make Cyrus potentially suspicious as well. So Cyrus is like, he's like a hot target at the moment.
Yeah.
And we don't really, you know, no caller ID. Like, so a lot of people set their phone like that so that people can't see who's calling. But I guess it's meant to be a clue.
Right now, I feel like it's just too obvious. Yeah, like it just feels too obvious and on the nose to me right now.
Yeah, maybe.
So maybe it is just a red herring. Inside, Luna and Austin are at the piano. And I'm just going to apologize ahead of time because I really liked them.
No.
I'm sorry.
No, you're an idiot. Sorry, I'm sorry. He was such a douchebag when she was like picking away, and she was like earnestly being like, look, I'll show you something nice. And then he takes over and it's like, haha, showing you up. And I mean, she does say that was a real asshole move, but like, what the fuck is wrong with him?
I think, okay, look, like all jokes aside, I did like Austin in this moment at the piano because I think that I also really liked Luna because I think she was being very forthright with him and saying like, yeah, you were being an asshole. Like, why do you always do that? And he's like, I don't know, blame my parents or something. And like, he doesn't really get into it, but I think that he kind of does let down his walls a little bit. I was very impressed by the piano thing too. I thought that was like very well done from the show's point of view. And like, unfortunately, tortured, like, artist vibe asshole who secretly has a lot of emotions is my thing, for better or worse. So blame me all you want. I don't know. But I'm very interested to kind of peel back the layers of Austin. Because like we were talking about last week, the show's periphery characters are a lot more nuanced than I thought they were going to be. And now I'm very interested in what kind of person Austin truly is.
Yeah, I don't understand where this is going. And when he says, you know, when she's like, why are you always such an asshole? He's like, I don't know, it's my default setting. Like, as in like that reactionary thing. Earlier in the episode, someone was like, yeah, Austin needs it to turn off the algorithm in his head. So like maybe he's like got some real manic thoughts that make him a bitch, basically.
Yeah.
Like he's in a mind prison.
Yeah.
Possibly. It's not really an excuse for being a douchebag, but.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm not excusing his behavior because he has been a jerk and I didn't like the way that he was talking to Luna at the beginning of the episode. But I'm very curious if this will continue into something and if he will become more vulnerable or if he's going to become more problematic and she gets over him or if he dies and, you know, who knows what'll happen.
I don't know.
Yeah. But outside, Everett shows Blake brown and pink noise, which helps him with his anxiety. He was having a bit of a, you know, issue with his anxiety in the pool, and he got out, and then she goes to find him, borrows his towel, and he shows her brown and pink noise, and she doesn't like, I think she didn't like the pink noise,
but
the brown noise was okay. And they kind of have a moment here and they totally end up making out, which I was actually very happy with. I'm glad that they're sort of moving forward with this despite everything that's going on.
Yeah.
But then Phoebe wants to kick
him out. God. Yeah. It's so bizarre how she just is like, it's not even her house. Like, she just throws a fit about them being there because she doesn't like Blake, or like she feels like annoyed. Don't know if it's because she's like gotten more under the effects of the alcohol.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was wondering.
She gets annoyed and she's like, make them leave. They're ruining everything for me. They're ruining my night. Okay, calm down. No one else cares. Like, and that's basically what everyone says. Like, hey, come on. No one else cares.
Yeah.
And she does act like a total psycho, basically. It's kind of horrible of her. And then, you know, she's clearly still upset about Blake being her friend and then ignoring her.
Yeah.
We don't know what exactly is meant to happen to have made Blake pull away from her social life, but whether it was actually something that Phoebe did or whether it's just Blake's circumstances with her family and she's just mm-hmm. like, I cannot do this, like, shallow bullshit friendship or whatever. But she is chucking a fit and then, you know, you know, she's saying, you know, she sucks. She's, you know, they're horrible. I never did anything to her and she's horrible. And Harlan decides to shut her up by playing the voicemail Phoebe left, accusing Blake of something she didn't do. So everyone thinks Phoebe is even more crazy and it's like, Phoebe, shut up. This is ridiculous, because they hear her ranting about, like, having this agenda against Blake, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's not true. And everyone's like, wow, she's crazy. She's crazy. But then Phoebe gets shamed to a degree that I feel is unnecessary.
Yeah, it was a lot, because Austin makes Harlan send him that voicemail and he, like, almost immediately turns it into a song, plays it, like, on the loudspeakers. Yeah. And everybody's kind of going along with it for the most part. And It was really horrible. Like, you could tell how upset she was.
Even Everett joins in, and one of the girls, I can't remember if it was Blake or Luna, but both Blake and Luna are like, this is not cool.
Yeah.
And one of them's like, don't, Everett, as in, like, don't join in.
I think it was Blake. She was not happy, because she ends up taking Austin's phone and throwing it in the pool.
Oh, my God. And he's again? Like, again? Yeah, because of her throwing it out in the pilot. It was
I really liked this moment, though, because you could kind of see Blake hesitating a little bit, but also, like, knowing that she didn't want this for Phoebe. Like, whatever is going on between the two of them, this was too much, and she didn't find
die.
It fun.
Like, I would just die. Oh, yeah. It was horrible. So,
and
yeah.
She ends up doing something about it. So I'm curious if, after that act, Phoebe and Blake might be a little bit friendlier in the future.
Yeah, it's definitely possible.
Yeah. Hmm. I would like that. I would like to know more about what's going on between them. Because you're right, like, I find it hard to believe Phoebe's vitriol comes from a place where Blake just kind of, like, backed away from her and, like, they fell off. I feel like Blake had to have said or done something to her for her to be so mad at Blake.
But Phoebe, we haven't seen, like, a lot of redeeming qualities from Phoebe so far, but... Yeah, I do think probably something.
Yeah. So Austin jumps in the pool to get his phone back, and the werewolf monster is totally in the pool. Austin ends up escaping, but it comes to the surface, and everybody at the party sees it and runs
inside.
They all
back into the, you know, the pool room or whatever, the you know, the little French door area
that is definitely not going to keep them safe if that monster wants to get in.
They're definitely all, like, just waiting for this monster to come in and pick one of them to carry up the tower, because it's pretty intense. Like, what are they going to do now that everyone's seen it?
I don't know. Well, my only
thing more mushrooms.
Is,
tell them it was a trick.
What I'm thinking is that. Yeah, it was some, like, mass hallucination with the mushrooms or something. But not everybody was taking the mushrooms.
Yeah.
Phoebe didn't. So,
I feel like that's got to come up, though.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see. Because this was, like, very shocking to me, the fact that they all ended up seeing it. Like, I thought Austin was going to run away screaming about the monster, and then the monster was just going to, like, stay underwater and nobody was going to see anything. But it literally comes up to the surface and everybody runs inside.
Yeah.
So that could either blow the doors wide open on everything.
Yeah.
Or they're going to blame the mushrooms.
I think they're going to blame the mushrooms.
When in doubt, blame the mushrooms.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Okay, so this was pretty much it for the kids.
That's where we leave the kids, waiting for the monster to break in through those glass doors.
Exactly, which is like, oh, I wish we had more. Like, I really can't wait to watch the next episode. But we're going to kind of loop back a little bit to the adult storyline for this episode, because we do see earlier in the day, Kristen and Garrett visit the high school's robotics lab.
Is this normal for high schools?
I mean, a fancy high school, maybe.
I guess, I don't know, like 3D printers and building things. I don't feel like my school ever had any robotics. They had like a IT class, but like this was a long time ago. It was like how to use the computer.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago.
I mean, I had like a shops class, you know, but, and I could see.
Yeah, but like woodwork. Like,
yeah, I mean, it was woodwork
That like, yeah, if you're advancing through the ages and it's 2023, this is maybe the kind of stuff that is at school now.
Yeah. I wouldn't be too surprised. It wasn't like so out of the realm of possibility that it struck me as being odd. But the school's robotics lab does have a 3D printer, and Kristen already knew, and Garrett discovers by looking at the incendiary device that she has packaged up, that it was made from parts out of a 3D printer printed at the high school, because it literally says along the bottom, like, where it's from. And so the question here is, did the arsonist not care, or is there is this a setup for like somebody else?
I didn't think about that. I did think about how much Kristen knows and doesn't put on the table, I guess, like, as in, like, she knew, you know, because we, it's like basically the fact that she has been interviewing kids and she's like, oh, and I think it's one of the kids on the bus. Oh, I think it's someone from the high school. Oh, yeah. Why? I'm sure there's some sort of tactical investigation reason why, but why not be like, hey, we know it was someone at the school because of the incendiary device. Like, why not put all of that information on the table first?
I think,
is that like not how it works?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think part of it has got to be tactical. She probably is trying to keep as much information out of, you know, public knowledge as possible to make her job easier. But at the same time, I think she's constantly testing Garrett. And I think she wanted him to put together the pieces himself by looking at the parts in front of him in that classroom and what he was holding in his hand, the incendiary device, because, you know, she, I think she kind of likes when he's on the same page as her. We saw that, you know, she was kind of proud of the fact that he knew there was a second origin point. And so to me, it just kind of feels like a test.
Yeah, it also depends on who she's talking to. Like, when she's interviewing a kid, she's not going to be like, hey, we know it was someone who takes robotics in your school. You know, like, it's kind of like letting people give – well, the phrase that I've heard used is, like, giving people enough rope to hang themselves with.
Yeah.
And so it could be like that. But I guess, like, they're holding it back from us as the audience, what she knows as well. Like, we haven't seen any private conversations, like, you know, with her and Zhang or whatever, being like, hey, we know it was from the school because we have this proof already. This is the first time we're seeing, as the audience, the proof that Kristen has.
Right. Yeah, I was expected to see the proof way earlier than this.
Yeah.
But we didn't. So but do you think that the arsonist didn't care, or do you think it's a setup?
I hadn't thought about the potential of it being a setup. It definitely could be. I can't imagine why the arsonist wouldn't care unless they're so deranged that they're not thinking about getting caught.
Right.
Which is possible. But
Yeah. Because you would think it would be as easy as like filing those numbers off or something.
Yeah.
So I feel like it was left on purpose. And if it was left on purpose, I would lean more toward a setup. How come it
wouldn't be all melted?
That's a good point. I mean, if it was dropping something or...
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, Cyrus and Austin walk into the class along with Blake and Everett. But Cyrus is the one to be questioned because he's the one that told the police that the construction site was a good place to watch the fire. So that was immediate, like, this kid is, you know... suspect number one right now.
Yeah.
So Kristen.
And they kind of do that in front of the class and, you know, everyone's yeah. like, oh, which is, yeah, kind of, you know, I think that they're trying to make him feel a little hot and bothered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then Kristen, Jang, and Garrett question Cyrus after school. And I really liked the little bit between Jang and Garrett.
Yeah,
Jane says, like, you add no value to this team. And Garrett just smiles and says, we're going to be good friends. And
I just love how that did not. That is true. I hope that is true. I think that they'd be so funny continuing to be like this. Yeah, I think they'll be really funny.
Yeah. I just love that it didn't ruffle Garrett's feathers at all. It didn't put him off.
Because he's the best.
Yeah, he is the best. And I really, you know, if Kristen is bad, if she goes off the deep end, to have these two team up together, I think would be really interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So Kristen asks Cyrus to tell her everything he knows about his father's death. And we kind of already knew this, but he did die fighting a wildfire 17 years ago.
I said 18 earlier, whatever. We're assuming it's the same fire as Harlan and Luna, right? Yeah. We're assuming it's the same event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And so Kristen is basically like, yeah, there are similarities between the two fires, namely that there are several students connected to both, as in Cyrus, for sure, but also Harlan and Luna. And you could see Garrett, like, understand what she's alluding to and does not like the fact that she's on.
Why would them being found in the fire mean that they would set the fire?
I don't think it means that they would set the fire, but that there's something going on. I mean, unless they were like, oh, we were born in a fire.
And like, you know, also, like, why would Cyrus's father dying in a fire mean that he set the fire? But that kind of thing is pretty, like, I think that actually is kind of not realistic, but yeah, arsonists have a funny relationship with fire that could be triggered in something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, we've already kind of talked a little bit about whether or not we think Cyrus is up to something in between.
I mean, do you think that he is the arsonist?
I feel like it's too obvious at this point that, like, you know, I'd be interested if he was involved in some way or if his father's death was, like, part of the puzzle piece. But to me right now, it's just so obvious that I feel like they're leading us down the wrong road.
If he never knew his father and it's just assumed that he was a firefighter, what if his father was the werewolf and his father was also part of the pack, or maybe even the same father as Harlan and Luna, and they're doing a bit of incest, you know, like unknown incest.
Oh my God.
I don't necessarily think that's true.
I don't either, but that brings up a really interesting question that I hadn't thought about before. We're talking about Harlan, Luna, Blake, and Everett and their pack, but what about Harlan and Luna's parents' pack? How many of them are out there?
Yeah, so, like, that's what I'm kind of saying. Like, Harlan, Cyrus, incest aside. Yeah, if his father who died, if he really was a firefighter. Okay, let's take it at face value. He was a firefighter and he died fighting the fire. But that could also be, he could have been a firefighter who was also a werewolf, like one of those, you know, oh, it's my sacred duty to protect the land in my wolf and human form, you know. Right. And, you know, it could be that he didn't die, that he actually got eaten up by the fire and got spit out again as this monster, you know, that his dad is the werewolf, the bad werewolf, because he got corrupted by the fire.
Could be interesting.
I don't know. I'm just making things up now.
Well, we don't get too much more about that, but at least partially because Cyrus was the one to say that construction building was a good vantage point to watch the fire, they all head over there. So we see Kristen, Prisha, Jang, and Garrett go to the construction site with a guard. And Kristen points out that Prisha was part of some quote-unquote radical environmental groups, which is kind of interesting, but Garrett is quick to say that they were never convicted of arson, which made it sound like they were convicted of something else.
Yeah, probably were. But I was like, why would an environmental group do arson? Maybe to show people that climate change is real and there's going to be a big fire, and that, you know, if you, I can imagine a radical level of environmentalism causing a problem, like to be like, look at what's happening to the planet, like trying to frame it as a natural fire.
And especially for fires, because there is like a renewal aspect to forest fires. So I could see them kind of like being like, well, in the end, like it'll be okay because maybe we'll, you know, raise all of the houses and then more forests will pop up or something like that. Like I could see them explaining that away.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but Kristen kind of ends up apologizing to Garrett about that line of questioning, kind of saying like, you know, it's part of the job, like she can't really turn it off, like she kind of just has to prod. And she wants to know more of Harlan and Luna's story. So Garrett basically tells her the simplified version, that he found them, he fostered them, he didn't end up wanting to give them up. And my question here, and I kind of hate to ask this of him, but do you think he really wanted those kids, or do you think he felt obligated because he knew that they were werewolves?
Yeah, I don't. I think that he definitely didn't want to just pass them on to someone and be like, yeah, these are normal human babies. Yeah. Like, definitely think that they. But yeah, I think, you know, he loves the forest and he loves nature. And he has these kids that have this special connection to nature. And he's like, I'm probably the best person to look after them and protect them and help whatever this weird wolf situation is. You know, I don't think obligation is necessarily a bad thing. But I think maybe after 2 months he also was, like, quite attached.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. I feel like there is a sense of obligation in that, like, I know what happened. I know what I saw. I know what I believe. It's probably not safe for me to just like give these to other people.
And also when they grow up, they're going to have questions and he's going to be the best person to answer those questions.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think obligation is not necessarily a bad thing. I think there was probably love there, because if there wasn't, you know, it's not like they posed much of a threat as puppies/babies. So if he really, you know, didn't want them around, he would know how to take care of that. But I think that, yeah, he probably did end up loving them pretty quickly and then wanting to take care of them.
Yeah. I mean, did you love Callie after having her for 2 months?
Yes. She's also a pain in my butt.
Okay. But, well, that's like Harlan, so that's fine.
That's true.
Callie is a cat, not a human baby.
Yes. Yeah, just in case that wasn't clear. So we also learn in this moment that Kristen had a son who died in a fire.
And I think this was quite a shock.
I think this story, this piece of her background, which is really the first piece of information that we get about her that's like personal, in any other show, this would be like, oh, okay, her son died in a fire. She became an arson investigator. This is like her life's passion, so that no other kid, you know, no other family has to deal with what she had to deal with. But in this show, I'm like, this is important.
I feel like that maybe she already had the job before he was killed.
Okay.
I might be wrong, but just age-wise, I don't know how old her son was when he died versus, like, how long she's been doing this job.
Yeah.
She could have been a different kind of inspector before that, but I don't know. I'm sure we'll find out more, unless it's a massive lie that she's trying to, you know, use to get people to relate to her. I don't know. It's very strange.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm not trusting anything about her.
Well, if the werewolves, here we go. Here we go, Karen. If the werewolf power, what if the werewolves are so like a bit immortal and they don't really age? So maybe she's Harlan and Luna's grandmother.
Ooh.
What do you think of that?
I mean, that would be kind of interesting.
You know, like if her son was their father.
Right.
Because, yeah, maybe they don't age that much. Again, I'm just making things up now, so I really, I don't know what to tell you. Yeah,
I mean, I think that would be interesting. Like, I just feel like there's something more with this sun story, you know, like I was saying, in any other
show. I mean, there's got to be.
Yeah, it would feel normal, but here
it's got to be like a part of the puzzle.
Yeah, exactly. So Garrett is kind of the one who figures out that the arsonist started the fires using drones that he set off at the same time from the construction site. And this is what we got in the trailer where she's like, you're practically doing my job for me.
Yeah.
And I really thought that was going to be about the dead bodies, the nest of bodies, but it was not. It was about this. So that's kind of interesting and, you know, doesn't really tell us a whole lot other than like how it started and why there's two origin points, but doesn't really point to a person specifically, you know, setting the fire. So yeah, they end up going downstairs to check the elevators. And I just want to remember, it's Kristen who wants to check them, right? I'm pretty sure she's the one that points out the doors.
I feel like we kind of cut in halfway through the scene, but yeah. What? Well, I got to be confused. What warrant are they waiting for? Do we know who, what a warrant they're waiting for to search?
I mean, was it for Cyrus?
It could be for Cyrus, or it could be for where they, even where they are, the construction site, maybe, like, as in, like, they're just going there to have, like, an investigate, you know, they're going to have a poke around, but then they're allowed to poke around more?
I don't think so, because they were being let in by the guards.
I suppose so. It might be Cyrus's house, so maybe we don't find out. Hang on. They get to the construction site and Kristen's like, what's over here? And the guy says, oh, it's the elevator bank or whatever. And she's like, open it up. And he's like, the key's downstairs. So yeah. I don't know if that was her sending him away on purpose or what, but yeah.
Yeah, that was, it's all very interesting how that ends up happening, because then Jang gets a call that the warrant has been approved. So everybody else leaves. Kristen decides to stick around with the guard to look in the elevator bank. From their point of view, it definitely makes her look less suspicious. Like, she's the one who wants to investigate. She doesn't know what's behind these doors. When in reality, I mean, maybe she didn't to begin with, but she knows what she found once she saw it. But I'm just a little bit confused as to, like, if they all had gone in together, you know, was she going to bonk everyone over the head?
I don't understand why she had, why, like, I don't understand any of what happens here. Yeah. Like, as in, like, yeah, either she knows what's down there and she wants to get the guard out of the way for some reason. Why not just ignore it? Like, if she did know what was there, why not just ignore it and come back later? But, like, yeah, the fact that she opens it up, she sees it, she's like, a werewolf did this, and then she's like, you go down the hole now too.
Yeah.
It's like, what? What?
It's, that scene was so creepy, but so well done, because they walk over to the hole, they look down, he's like, oh my God, you know, what could have done this? And she tells him, a werewolf did it. And she says it very unironically. And kind of just spills the beans and then immediately just bashes him over the head, surprising him. Like, he's just standing there bleeding, doesn't really understand what's going on. And she pushes him down into the hole. And so we're kind of left with this, like, she obviously just killed an innocent person, but it also feels like she's still working against the werewolf in a way. So,
I don't,
like,
know. Killing him and throwing, doesn't that feel like covering up the werewolf? Like, as in, maybe she didn't know for sure and then she found this. And, you know, if her and the guard discovered this together, like, her killing the guard feels like that she wants to cover up this spot. Whether this is pro or anti-werewolf agenda, I don't know. As in, like, got to keep investigating the werewolf privately, and is willing to kill people to protect the secret of werewolves, whether she's pro or anti them.
Yeah.
Like, the fact of the matter is, if the guard had lived, they would have had to go through the rigmarole of, like, oh, we've discovered bodies at the construction site, and do, like, a legal investigation, you know, on top of the werewolf investigation.
Yeah.
Like, with a, if a person's seeing this, it's like, oh, I have to file a report. Oh, no, we have to investigate this. Whereas getting him out of the way means that she just keeps that part of the investigation secret. So whether she's pro or anti-werewolf, it does seem like she's covering it up.
That's so interesting, though, because the guard is going to be missed. Like, somebody's going to notice the guard isn't there anymore. And is she going to pretend that she was attacked? That will point to the nest of bodies anyway. Or if the guard goes missing, she's the one last one who saw the guard.
I don't know. It's very strange. There's no answer here.
No, there's not. And I just keep going back to, like, what was the actual point of this? But I don't think we're going to understand that until maybe the next episode, maybe not till the end of the show, the end of the season. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I do want to talk about predictions for episode 6 real quick, because we get another very quick teaser. And we basically see, like, two main things. The cops break up the party where all the kids are at, and Garrett says he sees something that changes everything. Do you have any theories?
No. Maybe he sees someone transforming, like, so he gets a clue as to who it is.
Yeah.
Or maybe he sees the pile of bodies.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or maybe sees Kristen decides to bring him in on the story. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
The cops breaking up the party after the werewolf has been there is... Yeah, I don't know who's going to react like what from the party, really. Like, if everyone's going to scatter or if we're going to see the pack split up a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this whole twist with Kristen is really interesting. We've kind of been waiting for it to happen one way or another. Like, we knew something was going to be revealed about her. I don't really know what this reveal means. But yeah. I am very excited to keep watching so that we can get some goddamn answers.
Yeah. Pretty much. It's, you know, so this is like episode 5 of 8.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't feel like I have, like, many clues. Like, yeah. I still don't feel like I'm sure about anything.
Yeah.
Which is, I suppose, the point.
Probably, yeah. But at least I'm excited to keep watching, and we've got 3 more episodes, so that'll be fun. Hopefully we get answers, at least some answers in the next episode.
Yeah, I hope so.
But until then, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.